Welcome and thank you for joining the Web Talk Guys radio show. My name is Rob Greenlee and this is the place to hear about the future of the internet, and we're glad to have you with us as we navigate the internet and the tech world out there. We're going to talk about the Iraqi war. We're going to also talk about the tech employment situation out there. Both my co-host Dana and myself are in the thick of all things techie. And we also work for .coms, and we're contractors and consultants in web development and web marketing and even streaming media.
That's right. We stay busy. I'm Web Girl Dana, and it's great to have you guys with us. Now, if you're familiar with the State of the Union Address here in America, that's what the President of the United States gives every year to let people know how the country's doing and where it's heading. Well, that also applies to tech and IT workers. We want to know what's going on in our future. So today, we've invited Nick Dottie. He's the editor and a researcher at techies.com, and he's here to give us a scoop on the State of the Techie Address. His terrific research gives job advice you can't miss.
You know, I think the first thing that I'd just like to mention is that we've really found a problem in how people are searching for jobs. So many people spend most of their time just doing internet searches, sending out 8,000 resumes a month to, you know, try and blanket every possible opportunity that might be out there. You know, a lot of people have found out the hard way that this just doesn't work.
Well, Rob, there's some important news from around the net this week as everyone's thoughts are on the war in Iraq. Israel warns websites on war coverage. Weblogs and war blogs, clandestine radio in Iraq, and some alternative news sites that are covering the war and bringing a different perspective.
Yes, from the other side.
That's right, Rob. CNetNews.com covered a story just recently this week about how Israel is putting down the hammer of censorship on websites.
They even have a chief censor that's looking at any information that's being displayed on sites or news sites, and especially sites that like to scoop the latest story or publish the latest piece of information that could potentially put the state of Israel in a compromised position out there on the World Wide Web.
So it's interesting because I've had those exact same thoughts lately with the coverage on CNN and MSNBC about exactly what our troops are doing. Yes, they hold some of the information, but Israel goes a step further, and I don't think it's anything we'd put up with here in America. But the sites in question are, for instance, Rotter.net and Fresh.co.il. These are the sites that are the news scooping sites. They don't want them talking about maybe where missiles actually landed, if and when. Mm-hmm. No, I shouldn't say when, but if Iraq sends any missiles over to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
They think it'll jeopardize the country. And what do you think about censorship like that?
Well, I think it's definitely over the top. And like you just said, it's certainly not something that would be put up with here in the United States, that's for sure. But it is a little bit of a different situation over there, I think. And there's a lot of vulnerability, I think, in that situation. We might view things a little differently if bombs are being thrown right next to us, too. So I can't blame them too much.
Well, CNET had some more news on the war and the internet that we just had to share with you. War blogs?
Yeah, that's a new thing, isn't it?
We all know what blogs are, that new kind of journalism where you write about what's going on in your life or your opinions on the world at large.
Yeah, basically, a war blog is somebody that's reporting on a particular war and using a blog format to do that. And there's some terrific sites out there that are covering the war in Iraq and doing a really great job.
One of them's Instapundit. Mm-hmm. I think we've heard of that one before. Instapundit has been coined the New York Times of the bloggers in the Grand Central Station of Bloggerville. Basically has a lot of opinions about all kinds of political things.
Yeah, and then we also came across a blog that's based out of Baghdad, and it's at dear_rihad.blogspot.com. And we'll definitely post a link to that on our website so you can go check that out.
This web blog, as you said, is based in Baghdad and is authored by Salem Pax. Now, he has an interesting writing style. I mean, it's like he's English or something, but he's not. He's an Iraqi.
What I gathered on the site is that he's actually using a translating tool to to publish in English. He doesn't really know that much about English, and you can actually tell in his writing it's not always complete.
We grabbed an excerpt from Friday that is what he posted, and he said, "The all-clear siren just went on. The bombing should come and go in waves, nothing too heavy and not yet comparable to what was going on in 91. All radio and TV stations are still on, and while the air raid began, the Iraqi TV was showing patriotic songs and didn't even bother to inform viewers that we were under attack."
They're trying to keep people calm and not panicked about the situation over there, I'm sure, and they just don't want their people to know what's going on, I don't think. So it's terrific that there's this resource of the internet out there to give people a voice to be able to reach out of their country, and it's something that hasn't existed before.
I know. A decade ago in 91, you know, when we were...
The first Gulf War. There certainly wasn't that information available because the web wasn't even around back then.
Well, I should tell on Rob. He got a little caught up in searching out Iraqi information on the web for hours upon hours and found some interesting things, and I think you should share them, Rob.
One of the best sites that I found about getting information about what's happening in the Middle East and specifically right now with what's going on in Iraq is arabnews.com, and that's A-R-A-B news.com. And it's basically Saudi Arabia's first English daily. This is a site that's being put together by folks that are right there in the midst of what's going on, and they're actually reporting it from an Arabic perspective, which is something that could be really useful to us here in America, that maybe get a little different twist than compared to what they're reporting what's going on back there and what people are thinking about the war. Yeah, and it's not always what we think they're thinking over there either, and I thought it to be a fascinating place to go read through some articles, and I'd highly recommend it.
Interesting statistics. They post what their readership is, and it's 85% non-Arabs. Isn't that interesting? I thought it would be more for the people that it's distributed in Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Bahrain, Oman, a lot of places like that, but yet it's 85% non-Arabs and 86% males. I don't know if that still holds true that females are not reading the newspapers, but that's what it seems to say. What else did you find?
Well, I found another site called Electronic Iraq, and it's at electronic-iraq.net. And this is basically a anti-war campaign website. That's got a diary of eyewitness reports from the front or from the country of Iraq where all this combat is going on. And that's a terrific place to go kind of see what's going on from the other side as well.
Another site you found that you shared with me is iraqaction.org. This was sort of in a similar vein in that it's really against the war. And their tagline is, "Working to end the punishment of people that committed no crime."
Mm-hmm.
But it has an interesting facts and myth section, sort of what's been put out there, and they kind of debunk it as a myth in some cases.
And Saddam Hussein actually has his own website up there, too.
Does he sponsor this one, or is it just like a fan of his?
I'm not really sure if it's a sanctioned site or not, but it's called the Iraqi Presidency website, essentially, and it's at uklink.net/Iraq.
It was really interesting to look at. I mean, now it's not a well-designed website. It's a lot of, you know, long pages with, you know, big letters and stuff, but it's got a biography on the president, his speeches, even really up-to-date current meeting minutes from February,
mm-hmm.
and cabinet sessions. And it's got interesting facts like he's married with 5 children, 2 boys and 3 girls. And it even talked about how he was shot in the leg when he tried to overthrow a dictator back in 59.
Yeah,
and that was interesting. And then sentenced to death in absentia back in 1960 for that crime.
And also,
we might be carrying out that sentence. I don't know.
That's true. Well, Dana, also I found a website out there that would be fascinating to folks that are into following what's happening with the war, because the U.S. has put together an operation to kind of spread the propaganda word on trying to get people to surrender, you know, to the U.S. troops, and they're using radio waves to do that over there. And there's a site online that's tracking that, and it's called clandestineradio.com. And what they're doing is they're actually putting up streaming audio file samples of some of the psych ops operations that are going on over in the Iraqi area, and where we're actually hijacking radio waves over the country of Iraq.
How do they do that?
They just go in and they broadcast right over the top of the frequency with a higher frequency broadcast. So it's got higher wattage than what's mm-hmm. being used by the local stations. And oftentimes you can hear both broadcasts going over the same signal at the same time. But if the U.S. uses a higher wattage, it'll actually come through louder.
We were playing that earlier, and I think mm-hmm. we have a bit to play for our
Yeah,
listeners.
We do.
حسن متابعتكم لبرنامجنا ونأمل بأن تستمروا بالاستماع والاستمتاع ببثنا عبر محطة راديو المعلومات.
Yeah, that was fascinating, the audio, and it's certainly, you know, it's kind of hard to hear and understand. I mean, obviously, if you don't speak the language, you're not going to really hear what's going on there. But that's just a sample of some of the psychological operations that are being done by the U.S. government over there to tell people what's going on. Actually, they were even broadcasting the president's speech over there just a few days ago, having it in English and then translating it into the local language. So go check it out at clandestineradio.com. Stay with us, because up next, it's all techies all the time. And if you work in the tech field, you're not going to want to miss the tips and trends we're seeing in the tech job market. And we're going to be speaking with techies.com, Nick Doughty. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
That makes the Pentagon, the Jet Propulsion Lab, and the Queen's Bank at Georgetown, Cayman Islands. I hacked into them all inside of 19 minutes, plus I reset your systems clock. Daylight savings. I got the job?
You got the job.
The Web Talk Guys, here and now.
This is Web Talk Guys Radio, and thank you for listening today. My name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Web Girl Dana. Well, you techies and you geeks out there, and I say that with complete affection. You're very familiar with techies.com, because nearly a million of you guys, technical professionals, and that's about 1 in 5 in the United States, use techies.com as a service to help find jobs and enhance your skills, your training, and to really stay informed about tech employment and trends out there.
Our guest is Nick Doughty, who's editor of techies.com, and he has recently completed some extensive long-term research on a number of issues, and we've invited him on the show to explain his findings, and it should be a lot of good information for all those technical workers out there who are looking for jobs, and it includes a state of the techie address. And he's also going to speak about the most desired tech employers. And he's also going to speak to a shift in the tech industry to demand-driven workforce using contractors. Nick, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me back.
Hey, it's great to have you back on the line. It's been too long. But why don't you tell us about your state of the techies address that you guys came out with here recently.
Well, yeah, I'd love to talk about it. You know, it's one of those projects that is very agonizing to do, but there's so much reward after the fact, because it's really just using our research capabilities not only to help us better understand our constituencies, but to, you know, assist the people that we're serving, the tech professionals and the people that hire them. And, you know, there's so much in this 40-page address that I could cover. You know, you can find it all over techies.com. But, you know, the main message I guess you would get from this is just the need for people to re-engage themselves to the new economy, to the new workforce solution strategies that you're seeing out there. And what I mean by that is companies have changed the way that they do their hiring. They have changed the way that they do their interviewing, you know, all these aspects. They haven't dropped any of their core methods of recruiting people. But so this address is to encapsulate the changes on both sides of the employment spectrum for IT professionals. It's the hiring side, and then of course the business side. What is it about the tech business that is influencing the hiring side? And so we're mainly doing this to educate all of the tech professionals out there, specifically those, you know, the poor unemployed people that have been out of work and that are struggling just to make ends meet. You know, we really tried to gear this toward giving them the knowledge that they need to figure out where they sit in the current status quo.
So what are some of the core things that that were addressed within the Techies State of the Union of what people can do to maybe further their careers or maybe take a little different direction in their career in the technology area?
Yeah, one of the things that we started out with, which you know is on everybody's mind, is the current state of job searching. Uh-huh. You know, what is it that employers are looking for? How do I get a job based on my situation, on my experience? You know, we're always trying to model our research, whether it be surveys or database research or real heavy analytics research, around what the questions are out there. What are the main questions that people have? And you know, I think the first thing that I'd just like to mention is that we've really found a problem out there in how people are searching for jobs. Uh-huh. So many people spend most of their time strictly, and I mean 100%, just doing internet searches just sending out 8,000 resumes a month to, you know, try and blanket every possible opportunity that might be out there. And, you know, a lot of people have found out the hard way that this just doesn't work. It's the companies that are really experiencing the pain with these resumes that I think is starting to resonate to us, you know, and we're trying to, you know, help out both sides, try to eliminate, you know, the thousands of unnecessary, unqualified resumes that companies get in exchange for helping people realize what is it indeed that is the top strategy where I should focus most of my time on in the job search. And you know, it really comes back to common sense. It's building a network, building relationships, engaging yourself in a community. And, you know, there are a number of ways to do that. Not everybody is comfortable with networking or engaging in certain, you know, groups or even conversing with friends. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to, you know, just tell them and give them statistical quantitative data that will hopefully help show them what the successes are out there.
Nick, are recruiters still a way to go to some degree, or is that just another bird shot into the wind?
You mean like third-party recruiters?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I think, Dana, the most effective third-party recruiters or headhunters, if you want to call them that, are the ones that find, you know, the top executives out there, you know, and of course the executives present the highest marginal value for them because, you know, you get one executive hired at a Fortune 500 company and you're sitting pretty well for a while. But, I would say to the average tech professional, a recruiter is not going to give you that boost that you need. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're not interested in giving you, you know, the marketing boost that you would expect a recruiter to give you, or more focus as to what companies to approach. They don't work as hard for you as you can work for yourself.
Yeah.
And they're only going to work with you if they really feel like you are one of their top most qualified people and that they believe in you. So, in essence, you are not only trying to impress the companies out there with your skills, you have to first get past the recruiter and impress them.
Yeah.
And they have to be even more impressed so that they can, you know, turn around and sell yourself to those companies. We obviously are a little bit biased, but, you know, we feel it's an effective strategy, but mainly at the higher IT level.
Yeah, and I think most recruiters out there really don't have that many jobs that they can offer, and they wind up pulling in hundreds of resumes to try and sift through them, and you're just one of them. And if you certainly count on that as a possible outlet for you getting a job, you're pretty low on the totem pole. And also, I think that, you know, there's so many resumes being submitted to companies online because it's so much easier. It's probably causing more of a problem for your job search.
Yeah, the resumes, that's what we found as being one of the top employer complaints or recruiter complaints right now. And you'll find that in the State of the Techie address when you get to our employer section. That, you know, that's what they need help with, and that's where we see a lot of opportunity in being able to filter candidates, being able to present employers with only the most qualified people out there. You know, you'll notice certain organizations such as the ITAA and other organizations that have a lot of interaction with the government, that there's still a shortage of qualified tech professionals for a lot of work out there. We really take kind of a neutral stance on that because it really doesn't help anybody get to anywhere by saying that. You know, it doesn't say that you should go out and, you know, get more skills because you know, you're just not qualified for the jobs that are out there today. But what we recommend in interpreting that that kind of reality is just to, you know, take a more relationship building approach to finding jobs. You know, you're only going to find your true qualifications when meeting with people, when comparing yourself to your peers and figuring out what it is exactly what these companies want. Sometimes you're not going to find that in the job descriptions. And so when you're submitting resumes, and you might submit everything that they could possibly ask for, but if you're one of 1,000 people that submitted the same thing, then you're just part of that pile.
Yeah.
So we're trying to, you know, create more assessment type products, more, pre-screen type services. I wouldn't even call them products. They're more just resources because for the most part, they're either free or very low cost to just kind of focus people on working with the employers more, working with the people that are hiring before they go and make, you know, these passive decisions without consulting with the employers.
Nick Dottie's on the telephone with us. He's the editor of techies.com, which is a technology training and employment website.
Are tech employers relocating people as much as they did probably 3 or 4 years ago? And the reason I raise that question is that it seems like people try and go after jobs on a national basis. And should they be looking in their own backyard as the most likely place to find a technology job first?
That's a great question. You know, I think it depends on where you live. Obviously, certain economies, local economies, have been affected and downsized more than others. I know that Colorado was hit really hard after the tech collapse of a couple years ago. And so, you know, you can't really relate it across the country. I know that the research triangle in Carolina continues to grow as far as business out there. Up here in the Twin Cities, the ever-strong medical community and biomedical development has kept a lot of techies engaged. And, of course, the never-ending growth of Best Buy and other top retailers out there has really kept a lot of people employed here. But, you know, it's something that I wouldn't personally limit to a national audience. If you're looking for a job, there are so many opportunities to telecommute, and there are so many opportunities to just do work on a part-time basis out there now that I think people should not exclude from the solution or from the possible work that's available. You know, as I mentioned earlier, there is a lot of part-time work out there, and a lot of companies are hiring contractors to do this work because it's a safer bet, and it creates a more demand-driven workforce situation. So the only way that you can open yourself up to that opportunity is to accept part-time work or to accept being a contractor.
Yeah, are you seeing more people wanting to like maybe move down the path of maybe a blending between part-time and contract work or self-employment?
Yeah, we don't have any statistics on that, but we are seeing that because there are people that, you know, are mainly looking for security and stability, and in doing that they realize, you know, for instance, right here at techies.com, we have some former employees that, you know, we no longer were able to afford them as full-time employees a while ago, but we've routinely used them over the last year as contractors, you know, so on an as-needed basis, we will hire, you know, back our Oracle DBA, or we will hire back a network administrator for, you know, what might be just a few hours to might be a couple weeks to do certain projects. And we find that, you know, the expectations on both sides are much more focused, and, you know, the results of those projects are usually a lot better. We have, you know, a better morale, you know, in the people that do contract work for us. You know, and then you don't have any downtime at all. You know, it's obviously going to be more expensive by the hour to hire contractors, but, you know, on an annual basis or even a quarterly basis, you are saving a lot of money. And I think, you know, people that are full-time employees out there that may have found another job after they were laid off realize that they should keep their options open for contract work, too. And more than likely, a lot of techies have already done some project work. It's so easy to do. It's so easy to do remotely. And so I think techies, more so than any other workforce constituency out there, is open to doing contract work on the side.
Seems like that the only downside to doing contract work or part-time work is the loss of medical benefits and those type of retirement plans, those kind of things. And it seems like, and I certainly want to get your thoughts on it too, is are we seeing a major shift going on in how employees relate with companies out there? And are we moving more towards contract and part-time work type of arrangements? And what does that say about the future, you think, of employment? And it doesn't necessarily have to include just tech employment. It can include all sorts of type of companies.
Right. Well, you know, Rob, we're coming out with some new research here pretty soon as we're, you know, changing with the economy as a company. And one of the main things that techies.com and I think you will begin to see other employment entities realize and then adapt to is that we are seeing a shift toward a more demand-driven workforce. And that means that, like products, you know, like Dell Computer is probably the best example where that, you know, they don't have a big warehouse of parts. They just take the order and then they order the parts and put the computers together and send them out, and so they save so much money because they only build as demand tells them to build. And we feel that the workforce is adapting that same principle. A lot of companies, especially the large ones such as Microsoft, have gotten into a lot of trouble, you know, dealing with contractors and full-time employees. I know that they had some issues with contractors, and then they had some issues with their employees as far as expenses, and so they've been trying to solve a key labor force issue. But there is definitely a leading solution out there that is growing fast, and we've actually partnered with a company called Soho Resource Group, which aggregates contractors, makes 1099 employees W-2 employees. And so you can be a contractor through Soho as a consultant. That's the term that they use to call you. And you are able to access those Fortune 500 company medical, dental benefits. So, you know, even if you're a full-time contractor or a part-time contractor, you can choose to route all of your benefits, all your tax administration through Soho. Now, it's not a staffing agency. It's a very unique player in the market right now. And, you know, they're virtually a startup, but they are really gaining a lot of attention, I know, in Washington And of course, they've got our attention because we have a high number of contractors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the main drawbacks to contracting, as you mentioned, is dealing with all the benefits and
yeah.
and paying all the quarterly fees to your CPAs. So we think that this is a solution that is going to only grow more and more rapidly and allow people that might not normally consider contract work to do so eventually.
So are they doing actual placement? I mean, do they have like a job board, or are they relying on companies like you guys to be that job board?
Yeah,
all they're doing is the back-end stuff.
Right. Techies.com is essentially an affiliate, and we're a strategic affiliate. And so, you know, people that are looking for work on Techies.com as a member, they can then go through Soho, through the Techies.com site, and registered to become a Soho consociate, and then of course Soho takes over from there, and they handle all of that administrative stuff that especially first time contractors are just not familiar with, and they have all the necessary partnerships that you would need to give you your correct insurance and your benefits that you would deserve. And they also cap it at $60,000. So if you make more than $60,000 as a contractor, none of that is included in your taxes. So you're only taxed $60,000 and below.
Oh, interesting. So were those guys at Soho.com or something like that?
It's Soho Resource Group, and I can send you some more information to post on the site.
Okay.
But the company is called Soho Resources Group.
Oh, okay. Terrific.
We're having a conversation with Nick Doughty. He's editor of Techies.com, a technology training and employment website. More with Nick in a moment. You're listening to Web Talk Guys Radio. The Web Talk Guys are thrilled to be your radio hosts, but we'd also be thrilled to host your website, too. The Web Talk Guys website hosting service combines a high-speed, dedicated internet connection and the marketing power of a link from the show's website to help you. We offer all the standard hosting stuff for a very low, limited-time hosting price of only $10 a month for the first 3 months. To learn more, go to WebTalkGuys.com and click on Web Services or email info@WebTalkGuys.com. You can reach us by calling area code 253-640-0164. Web Talk Guys, not just your radio hosts, but also your total hosting solution. Welcome back to Web Talk Guys Radio. We're in the middle of a conversation with Nick Doughty. He's the editor at Techies.com. He's explaining some research and information about technology training and employment trends for the IT professional.
Let's talk a little bit about your recent article that you posted on the site about the most desired IT employers out there. What were you trying to cover with that and talk about in that article?
Yeah, that's an article that took quite a while for us to compile, and we wanted to work as closely with the Techies members on this one to really educate their Techie peers on what employers out there were viewed as being the most desirable on a number of levels. And it's not to be confused with Computer World's 100 best places to work in IT.
Mm-hmm.
It's a similar survey to Computer World survey, but it's not exactly the same. And the key difference is that this is Techies, the actual tech professionals, telling us who they most desire to work for, as opposed to the CIOs and the company personnel submitting data to Computer World to survey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a different audience that was surveyed.
This is from the trenches.
Right. So we interviewed more than 6,700 tech professionals nationwide, and then we also regionalized the data. So we asked for the best employers in your region and the best employers nationally that you desire to work for. And, there weren't a lot of surprises at the top. You got Microsoft and IBM 1-2, and I think that's more out of a I think brand strength and product strength standpoint that you're going to find people that chose companies such as that. And I think there is still a major awe out there to be considered to work for a Microsoft or an IBM. There's just, you know, it's like working in a very prestigious company that you had always dreamed of working for. And, you know, so you're going to find Cisco and Intel and all those other companies toward the top of the most desired employers. But surprisingly, we found a lot of people are wishing to work for the government, federal and local government. And I think what that has told us is that, you know, people are looking for more stability more than anything. In fact, 16% of the folks that we surveyed said the number one reason they chose the company that they chose as most desired is because of their stability that is offered.
Plus, I think most of those companies actually are looking for people right now.
Yep.
Companies and government.
Well, yeah, I think, was it Homeland Security is looking to hire thousands of people, aren't they?
Yeah, and, you know, that's going to take time before we really see the push. You know, it's not going to be a rapid unleashing of 100,000 open jobs. It's going to be over time. There will be, you know, a significant increase in jobs for the department. But also keep in mind that that department is at its core an aggregation of existing departments in the government. So
they're going to be transferring a lot of people moving in. Yeah,
of course. So you know, it will create a lot of jobs. And I know the FBI, you know, they've got a lot of new money to invest in computer networks, and the Army, of course, needs to continue to upgrade their networks. So, you know, they're definitely looking for techies in government. But as anybody knows out there, it's harder to qualify for the government. You do have to have security clearances, and there are some other drawbacks to applying to the government. You know, it takes a lot longer to get into that.
So are you guys seeing any kind of changes in the job employment market because of the war with Iraq right now?
What we're seeing is, you know, just kind of a stagnation that has continued pretty steadily for the last 3 months, a stagnation of employers posting jobs. I think every job site can attest to that, you know, they're just not willing to make any hires, you know, for their software development projects that have been queued up for a few months. They've got all these projects queued up, but they're not willing to pull the trigger just yet until they are more assured of the economy. And of course, the economy has a lot to do with the pending war. And you know, so it's nothing that would be a surprise to anybody. We haven't seen a dramatic slowdown in the last week or anything. You know, I think the larger companies are going to continue to hire as needed to compete. And I think there's a lot of natural turnover out there too that is keeping jobs routinely posted, especially in the larger markets such as New York City. There's those positives out there. It's not like the jobs are just not going to be posted for a couple months while we're at war. I think you're just going to see a continued stagnation until the spring in the amount of new postings.
Yeah, it's all about risk right now, I think, with companies. Yep. And if they see that the economic environment is risky, they don't want to take any chances. But it seems like, you know, as soon as we get through this and the war gets completed and we obviously take over Iraq, which I think we all think is going to happen, that things might start to return to normal again, you think?
Yeah, you know, who knows? Maybe there'll be some jobs
hope, right?
Open up in Iraq.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be a lot to rebuild, isn't
there?
Yeah.
You know, I think the key message that I would send to people that are, you know, worried about the war affecting the jobs out there is, if you haven't already, think about contract possibilities.
Yeah.
You know, if that doubles your opportunities for employment if you've only been a full-time employee all your life.
Yeah.
You have to, especially if a techie, you have to consider what kind of project work out there. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, even just a 5-hour gig, you know, could be $1,000 for somebody. So you have to really, I think, do what it takes to open yourself up to that market. It doesn't mean that that's only where, only the area that you're going to find work in the coming months,
mm-hmm.
but it certainly allows you to, for one reason, it allows you to do some temporary work while you're looking for a full-time job, and you might decide that, you know, this is a better lifestyle for you. And if you combine that with the Soho Resources Group solution, for example, you might find that, you know, being a contractor presents greater stability for yourself than being a full-time employee.
Well, we can certainly say for sure on our end that being a contract employee and a part-time and self-employment all works, because both Dane and I are doing that right now.
yeah. And so, you know, you don't have all your eggs in one basket,
exactly.
Which is smart.
And frankly, it's a more interesting way to live your life as well. So, I mean, that's one thing that we found. It's certainly full of risk, and it's difficult to get medical benefits, but
yeah.
I think just in general, just the variety and the changes that working on various projects can add a lot of interesting spice to your life instead of going to the same job every day.
Plus, you get a big old stack of checks with different people's names on the top.
Different logos.
As opposed to one check every 2 weeks. You know, it's kind of like a little surprise.
That's a good point.
Yeah. What is on the horizon for techies? What are some projects that you're working on, some more research that you're looking forward to doing and presenting to us on the show?
What we're undergoing right now is a changing of solutions as far as what techies.com is going to be known as. You know, from the get-go, we prided ourselves on being a top IT career exchange, and specifically a job board. We have since renamed our manifest as the Techies Career Network, and so we're really trying to tap into our network of 1 million tech professionals out there, and hundreds, hopefully will be thousands of employers that will be re-engaged in the job find process. And that means, you know, finding the employees that you need if you're a business, and if you're an individual, finding the work that you need quicker, finding more ideal work that's better suited for your skills and your personality and just your career goals. And so we feel that the best way to do that is to present more networking opportunities. And it's really a common sense principle. There are a lot of, you know, new business developments that we have underneath that support the community building initiative. But that's our big focus right now, is just trying to build community, you know, because we know that, especially with techies, the strength in numbers out there allows more projects to happen. There are a lot of spur of the moment jobs that come up through simple networking. I think a lot of unemployed people that have attended any kind of workforce center meetings can attest that, you know, there have been some opportunities that have arisen just by talking and networking with people, you know. So there's a lot of possibilities that we see with the community initiative, you know, and outplacement continues to be one of our growing resources. On-demand networking and help desk assistance, that's one of the things that we have recently acquired as a business strategy. We partnered with the spinoff of a company called Geek Squad. That might be familiar to people in San Francisco and Hollywood. It's actually based in the Twin Cities. Geek Squad was bought by Best Buy, and so now you're going to be seeing the Geek Squad tech support people in every Best Buy nationwide within a year. What we've done is we've partnered with their business-to-business version of Geek Squad, and so we're going to be able to provide companies, you know, 24-hour access to techies that, you know, need to be called to fix a server or need to be called to, you know, upgrade a network. And so we're really trying to create more demand-driven work ourselves.
So is that geeksquad.com? Is that what it is?
Yep, geeksquad.com. they're known for having a strong brand. It's kind of a comic book
feel
that they
name.
Have. I think they're presently in four or five markets. I think Chicago, San Francisco, Hollywood, and the Twin Cities are their core markets. But, of course, with Best Buy, they will be seen in every market.
Nick Doughty's on the telephone with us. He's the editor of Techies.com, which is a technology training and employment website.
Nick, why don't you tell us, how can a person who's looking for a job out there, a technical job, a technology job, use the internet in the optimum way to find a new position or a temporary position?
I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, that's exactly what we're trying to educate to our audience, is that the job board is not going to go away as a solution in the job search process. However, it's still being misused in our minds because it's being used as an end-all solution. And, you know, if you go and you apply and register on several job boards, you're increasing, you know, your exposure to your resume and your skills and enhance your job opportunities. And if you send out thousands of resumes, you know, just by sheer numbers, you'd think you'd have a greater chance of landing a job. But that doesn't solve the employer's problem right now. That doesn't help out the people that are doing the hiring. And the best way to help out those people is to help out yourself, and that's building a relationship, building a network. Use the internet as a tool to find jobs, but as far as landing those jobs, you still have to pick up the phone. You still have to use your job finding etiquette, which is emailing, following up, writing solid resumes that pertain to only that open job for that particular company, working with the tech department and not just the HR people to gain employment. We have a lot of inexperienced recruiters out there that are overworked because of all the layoffs, and so you can't depend on an HR person to necessarily hire the right person.
Yeah.
That's up to you. Only you can control the opportunity of an interview or the opportunity of a conversation.
Sure.
And if a career site, you know, if a career site does not list a number to call, look in the phone book, try to go to a networking meeting. Think of anybody and everyone that you could possibly contact to get into the person that you need to speak with, and build a relationship. Just because there's not a job there now, there might be one in a couple months.
Sure.
And I think the people that are getting the jobs are the ones that are in that virtual file. They are top of mind with these employers, and specifically employees that do the hiring. And so they're the first ones that are looked to fill these jobs as they open.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about content of a resume or a cover letter. What are employers looking for these days? I mean, are they, you know, and it kind of clues back a little bit to what you were saying earlier about customizing it to the job itself. How far should the applicant go with that? Should they write a resume, a separate resume for every job that they apply to?
Well, I think there's a quicker way to, you know, create multiple resumes, as you mentioned. You know, should I go out and spend the time, you know, modifying my resume to 100 different jobs? I think you should. I think it's worth the time. You're not going to have to change your resume that drastically from one job to the next, but mm-hmm. you really look to adapt to that employer's needs and what they post. But again, don't just take the job description or the language on the site to be exactly what they're looking for. You have to talk with those people and work with those people sometimes even before you submit a resume to get what they want. You know, it's almost like you're auditioning for, you know, a role in a movie. If you go in there as yourself and you present, you know, some of your best qualities, but that's not what they're looking for, even though they didn't post that, then you have to work with them and figure out what it is they want, and then go back and just re-present yourself, you know, your qualities. It might be the same representation mm-hmm. In your mind, but to them it's all in the approach. And so I think with resumes, don't be afraid to spend a little money on having a professional resume writing service.
Yeah.
I think you'll find for every day that you're unemployed, you're losing money. And so it's up to you. You're going to pay either with your time or with your lost money. Unemployment costs money. And so you're not saving money by just emailing or by, sending out the same resume.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth your time to invest a little money into a resume writing service, or at least into a professional that can help you tailor your resume to the jobs that you seek and to those gatekeepers.
Now, for folks that are looking for like part-time work or contract work, how should they adjust their presentation or their resume to fit that market? Because it is dramatically different,
right.
Kind of a marketing appeal to go after a contract job versus a full-time job.
You're right. The resumes for contract work are a little bit different than a resume for a full-time job, and that's a great point. I think, again, you need to talk with professionals or talk with peers that have done contract work and ask them what it is that are their key selling points. You know, for contractors and consultants especially, your certifications and your credentials are going to stand out on that resume, and you have to make sure that they stand out. The next biggest standout in a contractor's resume is simply your accomplishments.
Uh-huh.
Write your resume as if it's a listing of all of your business accomplishments. And don't just say, these are my technical accomplishments, like I successfully launched this e-commerce site or anything like that. You have to have a certain language in there that explains what it did for the business, because that's what companies are really looking for, is how can these tech workers drive our business.
Yeah.
And with contractors, you have to be able to sell yourself and market yourself on your credentials. So, you know, making sure that those are up there and not necessarily your objectives or your wants and needs or even your skills. I think they're looking for somebody that they can trust, somebody that they know has proven success from a business and technical standpoint.
So in those type of resumes, it's actually okay to be a job hopper?
Yeah, you know, I think you'll find a lot of contractors have had full-time experience,
sure,
or, you know, have had a number of different roles. You know, some contractors might have been former consultants for one of the big five agencies. So I think if you're a contract worker applying and you list, eight jobs on there, I don't think those employers are going to be worried about that. It's a different feel. It's a different kind of employee that they're looking for. And so you shouldn't be worried about that. But then again, you don't want to confuse, 25 different clients with 25, successful projects. You might want to just list your most successful projects.
Sure.
I think there's something to be said for deciding when chronology is the right strategy on a resume and when just the success chronology is the right strategy. That's only something that you can determine yourself.
Yeah, I've heard so many recruiters say that if you have a lot of jobs over a short period of time, it kind of penalizes you when you're looking for a full-time job.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it would be a positive thing. Could be, anyway, if you're looking for a contract job.
And there's a balance. You know, you don't have to include everything as far as work experience or even education on your resume. You know, only that that's relevant, and only that you think is going to open the eyes of those recruiters or those hiring managers. You might only choose to include one previous job, that created a lot of success, but it's exactly what this other employer is looking for.
Well, Nick, it was great having you on the show again.
Well, thanks. I appreciate being on.
Yeah, it was great hearing about some of the cool things that you're doing at techies.com, and we'll have to stay in touch and let us know as things progress, and we'll have you back on again to share with our listeners.
Yes, I look forward to being back, and thanks again for your time.
This is Web.Guys Radio.
And I'm Web Girl Dana.
And my name is Rob Greenlee, and we hope to have you back with us again next week. I'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.